Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome back to the WTF1 podcast with myself, Harry Benjamin, and Callan O'Keefe. Now, it was a weekend of no Formula One action. However, 17, I think, former F1 drivers and many, many other revered and recognised racing names from around the globe were taking part in one of the biggest races on Earth, the 24 Hours of Le Mans. One third of the Triple Crown, along with the Monaco Grand Prix and the Indy 500. Now, I don't know about you, Callan, but I watched Le Mans and WEC, the World Endurance Championship, probably on and off for about, I don't know, maybe 10 years even. But right now, it really seems like it's ramping up into something quite exciting, competitive. Everyone's talking about it's another golden era coming in for sports cars. So I feel like it's worth talking about. And of course, we're talking about it because Ferrari have finally won something.
I mean, let's start off by how many pit stops you have to make in Le Mans. And they didn't screw up the strategy. How good is that? straight off the bat. What an amazing victory for Ferrari to come back to Le Mans and to win it. And they did it in dominant style as well. I think, you know, taking pole position, having both cars at the front and, you know, basically leading most of the race, which is no mean feat in Le Mans, is it? You know, with the amount of challenges, the rain that came down, you know, towards the night stints, absolute carnage. So many good videos of the cars going off as well. And what an amazing result for the team. And, you know, when the sort of sports car racing 10, 15 years ago, we sort of saw it dying off a little bit. It wasn't necessarily driver's first priority. Everyone was looking at Formula One, but everyone knows how difficult it is for young drivers to get into Formula One. And that sort of brought a bit of a resurgence for GT and sports car racing. And I think you're right. I think if it continues the way it's going, we're going to see some amazing driving, some amazing racing, and hopefully a new era of the sport.
I think it's going to be brilliant. So Ferrari won Le Mans for the first time in 50 years, and that wasn't them trying every year for 50 years since. They haven't been in it for a while, so they finally came back in and won it. With a name you'll be familiar with as well. I mean, there's three drivers per team. Antonio Giovinazzi was part of the winning team, which means him, along with Marcus Ericsson, are two of the most successful racing drivers to come from the Alfa Romeo Sauber lineup, if you exclude Kimi Raikkonen. Since in the last, you know, 6 years. How mad is that when you add a Charles Leclerc into the scenario there? Just kind of underlines how a bit awkward that Leclerc hasn't really done much in a Ferrari yet.
There's still time. I back Charles. If Ferrari can come back and win Le Mans after 56 years, Charles has time. It's all good. Yeah. It's all good. Well, he just needs to stay patient.
He was there and said he'd love to do it one day. So that did get us thinking. It was 100 years of Le Mans. So it's only getting bigger and bigger. Like, so let me actually, if I just list off some of the teams that are involved in this hypercar category, which is the fastest, the most advanced, the top tier of world endurance. Cadillac, Vanwall, Porsche, Toyota, Ferrari, Peugeot. You've got independents like Glickenhaus. And then you've got Lamborghini, Alpine, BMW, which are all entering next year. Like, that list is just insane. So it got us thinking, who would you want to see enter the hypercar category from the Formula One world?
Well, I think the obvious answer that everyone wants to see is Red Bull. I would love to see the the combination of engineering staff and drivers come across and take on the challenge of Le Mans. It might actually mean that, you know, it takes a little bit of time for them to win, because I don't think, as you said, like, if you look at the entry list now, it's no mean feat to take on the manufacturers they're taking on. And these cars are, they're fast. There's a lot going on with them. There's, you know, obviously with Le Mans, there's a lot of strategy involved too. So I'd love to see the kind of like the dream team that's dominating Formula One at the moment come across to Le Mans and see if they can take the challenge of the big manufacturers.
That would be epic, wouldn't it? I mean, I was having a think about who should really be entering. Red Bull should be entering, because Adrian Newey is currently working on a thing called the RB17, which is this hypercar concept, but it's only going to be for, it's going to be for actual sort of road people who really, really rich people can spend about 5 million and buy one and actually drive it themselves, which is mental. But if he's already working on one, you think, well, just enter into WEC would be awesome. But then you also got, he also worked on the Aston Martin Valkyrie, of course, which looks like a mean machine. And then Mercedes have got this thing called the AMG One, which is another hypercar. McLaren have got a thing called the Solus GT, which again looks like a ridiculous hypercar form. And you're just thinking, right, well, Red Bull, Aston Martin, Mercedes, McLaren, get the hell into WEC right now. And then suddenly you can have, imagine Hamilton in a Mercedes hypercar, or Alonso in a Mercedes hypercar. Or Verstappen, he said he wants to do it with his dad.
That would just be absolutely
in a Red Bull
amazing,
hypercar,
wouldn't it? And it's the next, that, yeah, I mean, like, imagine Lewis Hamilton coming across, taking on, again, another challenge. We said in the last podcast, didn't we, about what drivers could potentially do if they're starting to get a little bit bored of Formula One. And I think, you know, like I said before, Le Mans did go through a stage where we had, you know, five or six cars and there was two manufacturers or three manufacturers, one of which couldn't really challenge. So it got a bit stale because you kind of could predict the result. But now, if we keep seeing this growth, it's going to be probably the most competitive, you know, motorsport there is. And the toughest race to win as well. 24 hours of nonstop racing, all the elements. There's always something that comes in. So, you know, basically this is our call to all those manufacturers. Whatever you're doing, sack it off and get yourself across to Le Mans now.
Yeah. I if you haven't watched, not just Le Mans, but it's part of, if you don't know, it's part of this series called the World Endurance Championship. And Le Mans is like the crown jewel of the event. 24 hours, as you say, Callan. And then, but every other race is sort of 6 hours. And there's less than eight, I think. There's going to be eight next year, but they race, you know, at Bahrain and Sao Paulo and all the tracks that you probably be quite familiar with from Formula One. And of the current F1 grid at the moment, there are two who have won Le Mans, Hülkenberg and Alonso, which is incredible. But this was, I think I managed to find everybody who took part this year who was a former Formula One driver. Jenson Button, Jean-Éric Vergne, Paul de Resta, Sebastian Buemi, who is like a Le Mans legend now, Giovinazzi, Kobayashi, who owns as team principal of Toyota, which is the team that's kind of been dominant for the last few years and hasn't really had any competition. Andre Lotterer, Brendan Hartley, Will Stevens, Felipe Nasr, Esteban Gutierrez, Jack Aitken, Sebastian Bourdais, Guido van der Garde, Danny Kvyat, Jan Magnussen, Daddy Magnussen, and Robert Kubica. Like, I think that was everybody I found. Plus, there's loads of like Formula 2 races, and like, you know, Scott Dixon from IndyCar was in it. And it's just some really revered racing drivers. So, crucial question. If, Callan, and I'm going to do this as well, of the current F1 grid, you could have your own team of three drivers and a team, who would you bring in to the hypercar category?
Oh, so much choice. I think number one would be Alonso. You need someone in there who's already won it. He has the experience. He's on the form of his life. He's nurturing into what a team leader. Do you know what I mean? You like to think it's not just the straw money that's causing him to be a sort of like nurturing older team member, if you like. He would be my first call, definitely. Then I'd bring in someone like Verstappen aside. Obviously, everyone would want Verstappen in their team because he's extremely
Alonso
fast.
Alonso, Verstappen, everything. Hamilton, done.
Alonso, Verstappen, how easy? I'm going to keep Verstappen off the table because I think that's the obvious choice. So there's a part of me that wants to say Sergio Perez because he's very good at saving tires, and obviously saving tires and saving fuel comes massively in handy in these races because the more you can save, effectively, the less you can stop. But given his current form at the moment, which we'll talk about later on, maybe not, but like peak Sergio. I'd like peak Sergio. And then someone young and fast. Yuki Tsunoda. just for the...
No.
Imagine, again, Yuki's another driver who... I'm doing it more for the content, really, to be honest with you. Imagine 24 hours of team radio of Yuki Tsunoda, all the stuff in the back of the pits with him, falling asleep and missing a driver change or something.
Yeah. Imagine trying to wake him up for his driver change or whatever, and him being in a really big mood of being woken up.
That's my fun driver line. And obviously, you know, I'd want Big Toto Wolf as the team principal and Adrian Newey on the car design. 100%. 100%.
If you could pick any brand or manufacturer that to bring back with this team, who would it be? Like are you going to race an Audi or are you going to race, I don't know.
Audi have that history, right? That pedigree already in Le Mans, don't they? I would say Skoda, personally, you know, bring the... No, I'm kidding. Well, why not? Why not see a Skoda? You never know.
Well, same company, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Imagine a Skoda winning Le Mans. That would be amazing. Beating the likes of Lamborghini and Ferrari. What a time to be alive. I think that the thing is, like, every young driver, the dream of being a part of, like, Ferrari, and Ferrari are back. It'd be great to see. You've already racked off, like, you know, Red Bull, Mercedes, McLaren. They all have these amazing, like, road car, let's call them hypercar projects in the background. I think McLaren. I'd like to see McLaren come in. You know, we have manufacturers from every country except for Britain, as far as I'm aware, with the, you know, like a proper manufacturer. So let's get them back in. Let's get this dream team together, and let's go win Le Mans. And if they need an advisor, I'm ready. You know, we can.
Yeah. You're the driver coach for Alonso, yeah? I like that, though, because I feel like McLaren's a reasonable one, though, because they have teams, obviously Formula One, but they've also got Extreme E, they've got Formula E. So, like, it would be another string to their bow. And IndyCar, obviously. So they do diversify it. So I went, I actually didn't choose a team from Formula One because I forgot that's what I asked us to do. So I'm bringing back Bentley. To Le Mans. Yeah, because I actually saw the hype, the LMP, or used to be called LMP1, I think, when I went to Goodwood earlier in the year. I saw the car that won Le Mans back in the day with the hands of Tom Christensen and others. I forget their names. Apologies to those. But Tom Christensen is Mr. Le Mans. If you don't know him, Google him. He's a legend. But I'm bringing back Bentley because I love the green racing of Bentley. And my driver lineup is so. Lando Norris.
Oh.
Yep. We've pinched him from McLaren. And then I've also ditched the Alonso Hamilton Verstappens as well. So Norris. Then I'm going for Alex Albon. Because I just think when he's done other categories, he's actually been quite good. Like he did DTM, didn't he? When he kind of crashed and burned out Red Bull. And he was all right. So I put him in there. I feel like he's a good team player as well. And now he's not technically on the current F1 grid, but a reserve driver. And Bentley is owned by the Audi group or the VW group, which is German. So I'm thinking, get a German in there, Mick Schumacher, as long as he doesn't bin the car. I feel like that's a good name to have in there. So Bentley back in WEC Hypercar with Norris, Albon and Schumacher.
That is not a bad call. Yeah. The only thing I'd say, and someone actually told me this a couple of weeks ago, and I'm not sure how true it is, but apparently having a race car in green is really bad luck.
What?
Like, yeah, apparently a lot of teams, they won't have a green race car because to run a green race car is bad luck. And so I would just be very, I'm not superstitious myself, but, you know, we're covering all bases here, proving that we can be good advisors to these teams.
But look at Aston Martin. They're fine.
I don't make the rules.
Better than ever, arguably.
Well, let's see how their form continues over the rest of the season, shall we? Putting two and two together here. I actually, you make a really good point. Like the Bentley pro, like pedigree in Le Mans, and as you said, Tom Christensen, like what a legend of this world. Like the world's most soothing voice as well. That man, just when he speaks, it's like butter in the air. Do you know what I mean? Like freshly churned butter. For lack of a better analogy.
I actually met him at Goodwood very briefly this year. He didn't know me, and I was just sort of...
How dare he?
But I was working with the TV people, and he was just sort of there, and we kind of have a really brief chat, and I took a picture of his car, and I put it up on my Instagram and tagged him. And he, like, followed me back. He sent me a message, like, oh, great to see you. And I was like, I mean, we didn't really even chat, but thank you. Oh my God. big fanboy moment there. But that was, if you missed it, that was basically the 24-hour Le Mans this weekend. So that's why we're talking about it. It's one of the biggest races on the earth. So we felt like we should give it some coverage here on WTF1.
Before we move on, I just had a little thought. How cool would it be to get not technically a manufacturer, but how cool would it be to get a Penske or a Ganassi entry? A full scale entry into Le Mans.
Because Penske sort of operate one of the Porsche entries, I think. So, but I don't know if it's not full Porsche or full Penske. So I don't know.
I would love to see like a merging of the two. Not that it's going to ever happen, but imagine like we saw the NASCAR, was it Garage 56 entry?
Oh yes,
that came over like screaming freedom. Let's go now. Didn't even have a door for the driver changes. They had to get in through the window.
It looked so much bigger than everything else as well, and it was so much faster. So they had to like pin it back every time.
Did you see Jenson Button as well when he, before the start of the race, he tweeted a Jean Girard quote from Talladega Nights?
No, I didn't see that.
If anyone's seen Talladega Nights movie with Will Ferrell about a NASCAR racer and then a French Formula One driver who comes over to defeat the American power. Like, it's great movie. And basically Jenson Button was like fully embracing it, wasn't he? So I think that, you know, watching that car drive around in a place that technically shouldn't have been in, really, when you think about it, because it's a NASCAR. How good would it be to see more American influence really come over and tackle Le Mans?
I would like that, I think. And that would be kind of awesome. Just to have these big, even if they're not big manufacturers like Ferrari or whatever, just but like big, well-known teams. I think that would be, like, even like a Haas in the hypercar would be kind of cool to see. Like that kind of branding deal, you know.
100%.
We'll get back to the show in just a moment, but first, a quick word about our partners at MoneyGram. We live in a world that's more digital than ever, with nearly every want or need just a tap away. And so many of our favourite digital services seamlessly meet the physical world when they're delivered to your front door. But until now, that hasn't been true for crypto. Digital currencies have been tied up online, with no easy way to bring them into the real world. That's why we're so excited to share that you can now cash in and out of select digital wallets at participating MoneyGram locations without a bank, credit card, or debit card. Convert your digital currency to cash and back again using the only digital wallets with real cash access activated by MoneyGram. Learn more at moneygram.com/stellarwallets. That's moneygram.com/stellar. That's STELLAR wallets.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
100%. Right. Let's move on then. Let's look forward. Le Mans is now in the past. It's the Canadian Grand Prix this weekend. It's race week. So who's the pressure on and who's it off? Because apparently, according to Christian Horner, it's off for Perez, because that gap at the front now, 53 points between him and his teammate. And after finishing, where did Perez finish last time? Fourth. And Horner said this recently. And I think that looking at the gap now between the two drivers, which is pretty significant in many respects, that will take pressure off his shoulders. And I think that'll allow him just to now relax, not put pressure on himself, and just refine the form that he had in those early races. So do you think that's true? Because he did have form in those early races, but has Perez been kind of pushing for something that he's just not capable of doing, which is being at Verstappen's level?
I mean, it should be noted that first and foremost, it is never a good thing when someone from Red Bull comes out and says in the media that you have their full support or the pressure's off. Because how many times have we seen this with Gasly, with Kvyat, with any Albon, of the junior drivers? Yeah. Albon, whenever they're in a position
O'Keefe.
Where, well, I never quite made it that far. I just, you know, scorned Red Bull F1 Junior over Analyzer's media article. What a tagline that is. No, I think it's one of those things, isn't it, where if they are traditionally coming out and saying that you have their full support and everything, it's not normally a good sign. It's normally their sort of way of saying that they support you because, you know, they get a lot of stick in the media about how they support their drivers. But normally that means behind the scenes, from what we've seen, that it's actually ramping up and intensifying and results are expected. And I think the pressure is potentially off for Perez because, like you say, the gap is too big. Verstappen is on fire at the moment. And maybe as you said, he's striving for something that isn't necessarily there. We've seen he took the fight to him early on in the year and Verstappen has just elevated his level to, yeah, he's basically untouchable at the moment. There's no one on the grid who I think can actually come close to matching him with the current package that he's got. And it's not like he's taking it easy either. I mean, we spoke in depth about that Monaco qualifying the last sector. Mm. I don't know another driver that's capable of doing that or has done it. You know what I mean? It's one thing having the potential. It's another thing doing it. So maybe now, hopefully, he does refine a bit of form. Because again, form is something that it's hard to maintain. And hopefully he can just get back in the fight again, be there, capitalize on a couple of mistakes. And then hopefully we see a bit of a shift back to make the racing more interesting. But yeah, I think if I was Perez, I would be looking for a massive shift in performance as quickly as I possibly can.
Yeah, but it's classic dominant driver team pairing, number one, number two. And I think, unfortunately, that has happened time and time again. And I just think if Sergio Perez just kind of accepts that, because he's in a much later stage in his career now, you know, and anything, I think, is a bonus for him. Because let's face it, he was on the ropes a couple of years ago, not out of lack of talent, but purely out of his options all dried up. And, you know, after a decade in the sport, that's a fairly long stint in Formula One. Fair play, well done. But that's just the way it goes sometimes. But I just think his life would be better. And he'd probably perform better, more consistently, and be there to capitalize when Verstappen, if he ever has an engine that blows up or ever gets taken out in turn one. And Perez can be there if he just accepts that he's number two, like Rubens Barrichello or, you know, anyone alongside Michael Schumacher back in the day. You know, they just kind of had to accept that. Right, you know, we'll let him through, you know, even Felipe Massa to a certain extent at some point with Fernando Alonso, you know. Just be there, be fast enough to keep your nice seat at Red Bull, keep the others at bay, and enjoy your racing, but kind of accept that you can't be that guy, which I know, and I can imagine that as a racing driver, you just cannot accept that.
Well, here's my question, right, about the whole number one, number two debate. Like, if you just arrive in a team and you accept the fact that you're number two, like, someone like Nico Rosberg probably wouldn't have been a world champion.
Yeah.
Because imagine Nico, like, and I know everyone will probably be saying in the background, oh, but Hamilton had the mechanical failures, and if he hadn't had those, then statistically he would have won. Like, obviously, I'm very much aware of that. But Nico massively took the fight to Lewis. Lewis gave it everything based on the situation, and Nico Rosberg bowed out of Formula One a world champion. And that's the bit where I kind of wondered, like, you know, you start off karting at 8 years old. It's hard to get to Formula One. It really is. Then you get there. Then you find yourself in the seat that is capable of winning a world championship. You know, you need the car underneath you. And finally, he has that, especially after being up against zero. It's very, very difficult to just say, well, you know what? The guy who you're racing against is just better than you are. Accept that. And, you know, I think it's racing driver, if you get to the top of the sport, you're not wired like that, because it's as I said before, it's so difficult to get there as a starting point, because it's not just about results. It's about, you know, you need finances, you need luck to fall into place, and then you need to find the seat. That's the hardest thing, even if you have all the results and all the money, to find the opening. And if you get that opportunity and you don't leave everything on the table, then, you know, you'll always look back and have regrets. And I think the problem is with Formula One compared to other sports potentially is the mistakes are so much more costly. You know, in football, for example, if you miss a slight tackle, you miss a challenge, you've got, you know, other teammates who can almost counteract that. And people make mistakes all the time. If you mess up in qualifying and you hit the barrier, you start last, it compromises your entire weekend. It's one mistake that has much harsher consequences because it's just you in the car. So I think motorsport's a more complex sport than that. Sergio is on a dip on form, but I'd like to, again, I've said it time and time again, I'd love to see him push to see what he's really capable of. I don't really believe that drivers peak necessarily. We're seeing that with Fernando Alonso because, you know, again, every other sport, you get to practice every day. Whereas in this, the drivers are lucky, especially that generation. They're lucky if they got 10, 12 test days a year. So they're still continually getting better. I don't think there's an expiry date on a racing driver. It's about how much you can find from yourself and how much you can extract.
Yeah. How, I mean, we know how important stability is within a team, but for Red Bull as well, that lineup of Adrian Newey, Christian Horner, Helmut Marko, Max Verstappen, obviously, and now Sergio Perez, despite the dip in form the last couple of races, you know, has this year has been up there, has leveled up, I think it's fair to say, over his first couple of years with Red Bull. But there were rumours swirling around that Christian Horner might well have been the Ferrari team principal this year, replacing Mattia Binotto. Helmut Marko's come out and said it cost Red Bull millions to keep Horner, but it only took him an evening or a day or something like that to persuade him not to leave. But could you imagine if Horner had jumped ship to Ferrari? I mean, what could have been? Do you think Horner is the kind of man that could have turned around Ferrari's form massively, or is it bigger than that? And equally on the other side, who would replace Horner at Red Bull as team principal? He is, after Franz Tost goes from AlphaTauri, I think Christian Horner will be the longest serving team principal of any team.
Yeah, he's been there forever, hasn't he? Really, for as long as I can remember. He's we always give the sort of like limelight, if you like, to the one individual, and especially like the Netflix era when it was Horner versus Wolf. Like how popular is that battle become? We all love it, don't we? But I don't think the Ferrari fix is quite as simple as one person. I think, you know, we've seen a lot of good people come in. Obviously, Ferrari have the man himself, Mr. Vasseur, running it now. If there's someone who can turn it around, it should be him. He's one of those, you know, mythical features, if you like, who runs race teams. But I would have loved to have seen it. I mean, we love a shakeup in the sport, something different, because, again, it would probably be something that does disrupt Red Bull, and it would have been something that should, in theory, positively impact Ferrari. But I don't think the Ferrari problem is quite as simple as one person. You know, these Formula One teams, they're so big, especially an establishment like Ferrari. The one guy at the top could trickle it down, but I think it would take a little bit longer. My question to you is, what do you think would have happened? It's always me talking. What do you think would have happened?
What do I think would have happened if Christian Horner was team principal of Red Bull, of Ferrari even? I actually don't think there would have been much change, to be honest. I wonder actually, because Red Bull has worked off the basis of number one and number two, to come back to that conversation in the driver lineup, whereas Ferrari in recent times, Leclerc, right, is Ferrari golden boy. Sainz is the guys come from the outside of the Ferrari world, but there hasn't really been a you must let him through for Carlos Sainz. In fact, sometimes Sainz has overruled and gone, most notably Silverstone last year, where Carlos Sainz was so adamant that you know, he needed to close up to the back of Leclerc underneath the safety car, and he had fresher tyres, and they didn't want him to do that. They wanted him to stay behind Leclerc and defend him, and he kind of overruled it, and that led to his first race win in Formula One. So I wonder if Horner, being Ferrari team principal, he would come down a bit harder on that, and he would go, right, Leclerc is our guy. We are behind him 100%. Sainz, you are the backup. And that is how Ferrari move forward. But I don't know, because at the moment, you look at the driver standings and you look at who's doing better, and it's Carlos Sainz. So, you know, I wonder if they're less definite one and two, because actually they are on a fairly even keel when it comes to performance. I don't know, but I think Horner would be more harsh when it comes to the driver lineups personally.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like one of the other things that would be really, really good would be the fact that obviously with anything where there's struggle, you want someone who's coming in, who's like he's a proven entity. It would be the same thing as if Verstappen went to Ferrari and wasn't performing. No one would blame Verstappen because of what he's done in the Red Bull car. Whereas if you took someone like Horner over, who's had this amazing dominance, everyone would kind of go, well, there's a bigger problem than that, isn't there? And I think that would be a getting rid of a big question mark for Ferrari. They kind of need someone from the current era of Formula One who has dominated to come back in, look after the team, and then they can really definitively answer where the problems are, I think. And yeah, well, again, we're always driving change on this podcast. If Ferrari could just counter offer it, they've got loads of money. It's not difficult to lure them away, surely. So just draw Horner over, or Toto Wolff, or someone. Just bring someone who's a proven, you know, championship winner in the last few years. It's got to be one of the two, doesn't it?
Well,
and let's restart the fight.
I think the hard thing about that, though, is like, yeah, they have loads of money, but I think Adrian Newey was saying, because he's been approached by Ferrari numerous times over the years, but you know, these people's, they have their lives now in whatever country, and you know, Newey and Horner are based in the UK. You know, they have their lives, they have their kids, and if you work for Ferrari, you have to just become and adapt to that Ferrari lifestyle. You have to move to Maranello, you have to engulf yourself in the culture there, and everything is Ferrari. Ferrari comes first before your family, I'm pretty sure. So it's such a culture change. I think that probably puts a lot of people off. You know, even though it is a dream to be with Ferrari, I think the older you get, the less it becomes as appealing. Whereas if you're a youngster, you know, look at Leclerc and Sainz, you know, they're only in their mid-20s. Of course, they're going to move their whole life and it's going to be number one. But for the other side of it, from a managerial kind of side, I think there's less of an appeal there, I think.
And would you really move when you're dominating?
Well, exactly. Just, you know, yeah. Why risk it? Why risk it? You know, I wouldn't. If I was Toto Wolff or Horner, I wouldn't jump ship anywhere else. Although in the back of my mind, I'd be like, oh, I want to prove myself somewhere else. But actually, I would
kind of already proven when you've won 20 championships.
I'd rather just mic drop, see you later, I'm out of here, where's my yacht, bye.
All right, Nico Rosberg, calm yourself down.
I would do. I rate Rosberg for that so much. Anyway, it's Canada this week. We all love it. Let's see if Perez can handle the pressure this time. But it is Montreal. I love this track, Callan. I've never been there. I'm actually going there on Wednesday. I'm very excited for the first time. But it has been the scene of many a good race over the years. And weather has played a part, incidents, strategy, tires. It's quite a good track
for racing. It's mega. I mean, it has a combination of everything. It's one of those tracks as well where it is much easier for an F1 car to follow because it has much less high-speed corners, lots of changes of direction, and then that giant long straight into the chicane before the Wall of Champions. Great overtaking opportunity. The big curbs on the inside cause absolute carnage if you get it wrong when you're side by side, and even if you're not, it's a very, very tricky corner. I love this place. It's traditionally been one that's always caused a bit of upset, hasn't it, as well? I mean, thinking back, my favorite memory is the... I think it was 2011, the race that Jenson Button famously won.
The longest race ever.
Oh, that race. And that, again, we talk about those moments that make you love Formula One. Like, yeah. what a day that was to sit and watch that. And yeah, I was a Vettel fan at the time, so that did come out. Now looking watching him dip it on the exit of turn 7 and lose it on the last lap. I remember I was like 13 or 14 at the time, and I was like borderline in tears watching Sebastian throw away a race win.
It was one of the best races I can remember Canada being, just because, and Button had been at the back of the field like three times. He crashed with his teammate as well, and yet he still won the race.
It's on the last lap, halfway around the last. It's so, so good. And you know, we, again, in even earlier than that, we've had great stories like Robert Kubica having his huge crash there and then coming back and winning the year after. It is one of those places where you can get a bit of a surprise winner. Maybe not this year, but hopefully let's keep up. You know, it's not like Red Bull are ridiculously strong in a straight line, is it? So
no, that's very true. It's a big power track because of that massive long straight. So it's really how good is your engine? How good is your power unit, really?
Just keep the Red Bulls out of DRS range. That's all you need to do.
Pretty much. Drive the widest car in the world. I mean, you nicked my favorite Canada Grand Prix moment, 2011, because, yeah, I think for us two, you know, we're both the same age, near and near about. So it's like proper nostalgia for us.
Yeah.
But then I was watching a YouTube video of like the best moments from Canada over the years. And like 1999 looked chaotic as well. There was about two restarts and there was a big crash into both of them. You go more recently, Kubica 2007 win. Hamilton, of course, is like the biggest winner around Canada. I think he's won seven times. Yeah, seven
and
times.
He won his first Grand Prix there in 2007.
And first Grand
well.
Prix. So I think he'll do quite well with it. He's just got something about him at Canada. He goes well. Vettel, recently, do you remember 2019 where Hamilton, he got a penalty for running out wide, I think in turn one, two, three or four?
Yeah, and the chicane down the hill. Yeah,
yeah, and he moved, they both
came back across into the barrier. Yeah,
yeah, but in part for me, when they pulled up, he moved the P2 sign to Hamilton and he took the P1 sign. And it was just like, oh,
iconic moment.
Come on.
I miss Sebastian.
He had so many eras. He had the villain era. He had the dominant era. He had the kind of wholesome era. He had it all. He had a real character arc, did Sebastian Vettel. But those are some of the best moments. Things to watch out for. Aston Martin bring in big upgrades, apparently, to Canada. Not sure what they are yet, but Alonso, this is at the request of Alonso to push them on because he's worried that they're now going to fall behind. Because, well, look at last time around, Spain, first time they were off the podium in all the races we've had so far this year. So Mercedes have jumped them in the constructor standings. And actually, you know, they Aston Martin should have been way further ahead, but they've only had one guy who's been doing all the scoring.
Well, it's completely overrated to have, you know, two drivers scoring points, isn't it? It's much easier if you just let Fernando do all the work for you. But yeah, you know, I think that's a really good point. It's traditionally a track that has Lewis has been very strong on. I know that, you know, the era that Hamilton had, he was strong everywhere. But he did win his first race there. He's very, very good on the brakes. Traditionally, he's normally the last of the late breakers. And that really is something that's important to Canada because all the braking zones are quite bumpy. They're all quite big stops. And it's a place where hopefully he can make a bit of a difference. And couple that with the fact that Mercedes, the upgrades that they seem to have brought to Barcelona really seem to be working. Hopefully, we're going to see a Mercedes challenging a little bit. And yeah, as you said, Alonso came out and said, well, this is the last race. We don't finish on the podium. Statement of intent from Fernando. And let's see what Aston Martin can do to sort of bring the fight. That really appears to me now that could be the fight that's really developing between, let's call it the two main teams for P2. It could be a fight between Mercedes and Aston Martin as we watch Ferrari slip away a little bit.
Yeah, well, in the constructors, what is it? 18 points between Mercedes and Aston Martin now. And of course, it's Lance Stroll's home race, and he's literally from Montreal. So big pressure on him. And we've only got one Canadian in the field now. No more Latifi. So it's all on Stroll's back for this weekend. Podium predictions, please, Callum. We don't normally do this, so let's have them, shall we? We normally do our WTF1 podium after the race, but it's a different kind of podium. So let's have your actual 1, 2, 3 for Sunday afternoon in Canada.
Well, Yuki Tsunoda for the win, obviously. Obviously. He's in the form of his life.
And you just cannot call this Formula One season right now. It is exactly. Unpredictable.
So many different winners so far and so many teams at the front. No, I'd have to be an idiot to bet against Verstappen. Hopefully we get something. You know, I would quite like the people to think I have some credibility and I've come up with a lot of stupid suggestions, like my Le Mans prediction, so or my dream Le Mans lineup. So I'm going to go with Verstappen P1. I'm going to keep Hamilton in P2. I'm going to actually get rid of Perez in P3 because I think he's going to finish off the podium in P4 again.
Okay.
I'm going to go for Fernando Alonso in P3, Perez P4, Russell P5. Ooh. And if I get this right, then I think we should start doing this more often. And if we get it wrong, then we're never doing it again. Yeah, what about you, okay, Harry?
I can't resign myself to putting Verstappen as the winner every time. I think he's going to have a crash into the wall of champions. It'll be so fitting. And I think Perez will win. I think he'll be back on form. It's a bit of a semi-street circuit, so he could do quite well. Hamilton second, because he loves Canada, and Mercedes has improved form. Alonso with the upgrades, back on the podium in third. George Russell fourth, Charles Leclerc fifth. That's my
really?
Top five. Yeah, that's my top five.
If I was going to bet on someone going to the Wall of Champions, it's going to be Leclerc.
No! You're so right. It'll be like Leclerc. Magnussen will probably do it as well. And maybe like, wait, should we actually predict who's going to end up in the Wall of Champions?
Yes. Yuki Tsunoda,
I was
Kevin
just
Magnussen.
Thinking Tsunoda. I was like, don't say it, but it will be Tsunoda as well.
And we've left out the obvious one, haven't we?
Oh, who?
Captain Crash, Nick De Vries.
Oh, no, well, he's been good the last couple of weekends.
Exactly why he's due a crash. That's
that
my whole
true.
Point.
That is true. I was thinking
I'm just
more
kidding,
like,
Nick. I love you, please.
It'll be more like Sergeant, probably, or like, or maybe Bottas, because he's not been on great form. I hate to say it, but
he's been
really
too busy cycling. That's the problem.
That's another good memory, actually, of Valtteri Bottas. Niche, maybe, but his first year in a Williams, 2013, a very uncompetitive Williams. I think he qualified on as third, I think, at the Canadian Grand Prix, something like that. Yeah, it was mental. I mean, he fell back like a stone straight away. I think it was because it was like a wet to dry qualifying. He did quite well.
Yes.
But that was when everyone was like, oh, Bottas, who is he? You know, another good
now
memory.
Look at him. Now look at him. What a fact to end on. That was
fantastic. Loves a bit of Lycra. Right, yeah. Well, that's a good way to end then, shall we? Thank you very much, Callan O'Keefe. I've been Harry Benjamin. We will be back straight after the Canadian Grand Prix on Monday for the WTF 1 post-race podcast. Dre and the team will be here on Wednesday for Hot Takes Wednesday. Keep up to date with the WTF 1 socials and YouTube videos galore and all that jazz. Like, subscribe. I need to get better at doing this kind of thing. You know, was it like, subscribe, swipe up and all that stuff? Social media things, yeah. But Canada, it's actually French speaking, isn't it? So we'll say à bientôt this weekend.
Au revoir.
We did au revoir. Didn't we do au revoir from Monaco?
Maybe. I don't know. We're not very good at these sign-off things, are we?
No, we need to get better at it. All right, we'll see you later. see you next week. Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.